start the program as soon as everybody gets settled. We have a full house. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a very special evening here at the New York Society Library. Welcome to all honorees, to your other participants who are here tonight, your family and your friends. I'm Susan Robbins. I'm a trustee here at the library and chair of the Children's Committee. This is our 11th annual Young Writers Awards. Tonight, we honor excellence in writing by young library members as well as students at our Project Cicero donor schools. We initiated the Young Writers Awards in 2003 to inspire reading and writing among our members, our young members, and we really think it has done its job. Tonight, we will be honoring 15 young writers. Their entries were picked from among almost 200 entries submitted by students from 28 schools throughout New York City and Connecticut and New Hampshire. We had an entry from both New Hampshire and Connecticut. We congratulate them as well as all the students who submitted their prose and poetry. Before we start with our honoring our young writers, I'd like to introduce and welcome Dr. Paul Wagner and Jeanette Wagner, who are here. And the Wagners are wonderful friends of the library, as well as supporters of education, children's programs, and the arts. The Wagners generously underwrite our Young Writers Awards, and we're very grateful to them. So many thanks to Dr. and Mrs. Wagner. Also with us tonight, and you'll hear from him later, is Mark Bartlett, who's our head librarian here at the library, who's an inspiring leader and always a consistent supporter of all of our children's events, as well as Barbara Stanton, who's chairperson of the Board of Trustees and also a great supporter of the children and the children's library here at the New York Society Library. The New York Society Library, for those of you who are not members and some of you who have not been here before, was founded in 1754 by a group of six young professionals who believed that the availability of books would help the community prosper. We served as the first Library of Congress in 1789 and 1790 when New York City was the capital of the United States. George Washington, John Adams, Alexander Hamilton, and John Jay all borrowed our books. The library continues this tradition of civic responsibility and commitment to literacy. Among its other activities, in 2001, we helped found Project Cicero, an organization with which many of you are familiar. Through its annual book drive in more than 100 schools throughout New York City, independent, parochial, and public schools, Project Cicero creates and enhances libraries and underserved schools throughout New York City. To date, Project Cicero has placed more than 2 million books in 75,000 classrooms, reaching an estimated 500,000 students, at least. I think that's really an underestimate. This year, we expanded into New Jersey, which is our first expansion for the benefit of schools in Newark and Englewood. We also have many published authors among our members. The writers research work here. They write their books here. Edgar Allan Poe lectured here at the library. Herman Melville and Willa Cather borrowed books. More recently, like some of you, Wendy Wasserstein did homework here. She also wrote some of her plays here. We hope that our Young Writers Awards will continue to encourage our writers to follow in their footsteps. We are honored tonight to have four prominent judges who are all writers judge our Young Writers Awards. And they're right here in the front row. And there's Dave Johnson, Carol Weston, Robert Quackenbush, and Edra Zisk. We thank them for their time, expertise, and willingness to share their thoughts and insights with us. And you'll hear more from them later. Unfortunately, Carrie Silberman, our head children's librarian, is home with a virus. But as the result, I'm given the honor of introducing our judges. So I'm going to start with Robert Quackenbush, who's here tonight and has been a judge, as have most of the others, since we began 11 years ago. And Mr. Quackenbush is going to present for third and fourth grade prose and fifth and sixth grade prose. He's a beloved author of more than 200 books for children and has been a member of our library for more than 30 years. He also created the beautiful artwork that's on your program, and that artwork, and as well as other artwork, is in the New York Society Library's Young Writers Awards book that we published last year on the anniversary of our 10th year, which included, in addition to Mr. Quackenbush's beautiful artwork, it included all of the winning entries for the first 10 years, and it's actually for sale out in the lobby if any of you are interested in purchasing a copy. So, what I'd like to do now is introduce Robert and welcome Robert Quackenbush.
What a pleasure to be here again and see everyone. I always think every year spring has finally come because it's the young writers. Look at this beautiful day we're having, warm sunshine, and I'm glad we're all here together again. And I had written an email saying that they were telling me, reminding me about the ceremony, and telling me, reminding me about the winners and all, and said, I said, well, this year, I have to tell you, is the best year of all. I've never seen such talent. But I said, everybody tells me I say that every year. But I realized because I'm really living in the moment, as children do. That's who are my inspiration. And I really congratulate all of you. And I wish everybody that I judge could have won, but it's got down to a narrow four. And I'm going to now introduce you to, I can't believe this. See, I didn't learn this till today, that this story, The Pen, which is an honorable mention, in the third and fourth grade, is written by two people. And now that adds another touch here, because you learn so much by the way the young people write, that's the way we continue that throughout our lives, and that is working as close as we can to professionals of what other books we've read and stuff. And this, it would be an experience of like working with an editor for two people to write a work that you swore was written by one person. So, and not only that, it is written about the life of a pen, trying to find her way in pen life. And why it is so good is because it shows the process of writing. I remember when I first began writing books for children, I rented a studio downtown, and I was all alone. It had been a movie studio, a huge place, and I was all alone with a typewriter, and just me and the typewriter, and I was typing away, and I was writing about a pack rat who talked. Now, this is a case, too, where you're writing about inanimate objects. Publishers at one time said, you can't write a book about a rock or an ant that talks. Nobody would read it. But now we had William Steig that came along and wrote The Amazing Bone and Sylvester and the Magic Pebble that were all about talking rocks and talking bones. And so he opened the door for all of us, like myself, struggle. Well, during that time of working alone in the studio, I'm talking too much, but I'm going to finish right here, because James Joyce said to be a writer or an artist means three things: solitude, exile, and cunning. I like the cunning part the best. That's trying to sell your work, you know, trying to find a publisher. So in that period is when I became aware of the unconscious. I'd always been a painter and an artist, but not a writer. And then I saw it was a different process, that you're seeing inside of your mind, not copying something from what you see around. And there's all this stuff that we've collected throughout our lives in our unconscious minds. And so you see it when you read the pen. It's in the notebook you hit. Now come up here, both of you. I want to see this, the two people that wrote this. A wonderful story that shows the process of writing. Now, please, Samantha, this is Samantha Capanna, Gladstone, and Victoria Simmelback. Would you please tell who wrote the most or how you came up with it? Would you talk right in here? Can you tell, can you speak together or one at a time? How would you like to do it?
Okay.
One, two, together. Three, go.
No one really wrote the most. We both took turns, like, writing.
Two sentences.
Yeah, each. Or maybe.
And we were on a trip to Black Rock Forest, and we did it on sticky notes with a green pen. We were writing it with a green pen.
Not really.
maybe 45 minutes?
2 hours. The entire trip took
about. Yeah, 2 hours maybe.
Two hours. You mean one of you would write a sentence and then another one would edit it?
Like we would take turns writing the sentences.
We'd take turns writing and then you'd fit them in together.
Yeah.
Well, you did a splendid job, and congratulations. Here, this is for Samantha. Okay. Well, now, go get those framed, won't you, and put them in there. Okay. Now, the next one here is this one really laid me up. I've been working since September on a book, and so I've been isolated. It's called Secret Agent Mama, about my mother's life as a secret agent during World War II. Thanks to this library and the National Archives, I got it done. And then about this time, the work arrived for the judging. And I said, oh, my God, I've been tuned in to write. That's what happens when we write. We're plugged into writers everywhere. Have you all? I see some heads nodding. So you've had that experience, too. And here comes The Wave by Rami Siegel. And I just met him and talked to him. He's 9 years old. And anyone who has listened to Debussy's La Mer, this story, to me, it's like hearing music. And I would come up here and tell us about it, will you? Thank you. Tell how you happened to write this story. I know they'll be interested, because I think they're going to be as moved as I was when they see what you've accomplished here.
So, knew that there was a competition, I'm like, oh, I could enter this, and I knew that even when I submit something, I won't get my hopes up to win, but I submitted it and I haven't thought about it in a while because of the tests, So then, right in the middle of the math test, I got a call saying that I won. I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, oh my God.
God had nothing to do with it. You did it. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And here's your wonderful award. Oh, let's open it up. Let's open it up so they can see your name. Oh, if you keep writing things like this, I'm going to have to stop. There we go. And now we come to the fifth and sixth graders. And listen, here I did it again with honorable mention to Isha Shiramar for the Cheerio escape. This is about a Cheerio trying to get out of the box and not being gobbled down for breakfast. Now, how inanimate can you get? So it was so thrilling to read this book, how they worked themselves way out of the box and to the front door and even got the door unlocked and got out into the free world. So come here and tell us how you got the idea for doing this, Isha. Are you here, I hope? Oh, God. Here you are. You want to tell us a little bit about it? How you came up with doing a box of Cheerios trying to escape from a box?
It just came.
Did it have anything to do with wanting to get out of school or no. Get out of your house?
I was just eating Cheerios like I usually do for breakfast, and then I thought I could write about Cheerios.
Well, you succeeded.
Yeah.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
I wish that was mine, but it's yours.
Thank you.
Very good. And then finally, Bravo, his love. And it's wonderful to see you and your wife here, Dr. Wagner. What would we do without you? Now for this one here again. This approach that I was working on this book that I was telling you about where I was holed up all winter not seeing anyone, and then arrives at my door A Dog's Life by Matthew Langendorfer. From two points of view, the dog's view of his life and the owner's view of his life, and I had just finished writing a book where it's told from four different points of view. So it made me think, there must be thousands of ways of writing a story, but how is it that we are both working together? So that's again where I say we are definitely connected some way when we're out there in hyperspace or something, when we're writing our books. So Matthew, please come up and tell how you wrote this wonderful story. Oh, boy, I always love to meet the author. Congratulations. You want to tell how you came to write this?
Okay, so my librarian, Miss Bishop, came up to me and was like, hey, there's this writing competition, and I think you could win. I was like, are you sure? But so I was racking my brain for an idea, and my dog had just had her sixth birthday. And, I mean, I love my dog. I was like, wow, she's getting old. Oh. I'm getting sad. So that was my inspiration for the story, thank you to my parents, but especially thanks to Miss Bishop. Thank you. It really means a lot to me.
Now that I'm finished, thank goodness. Because I think any more of this, and I would be a puddle like the witch in the Wizard of Oz.
Thank you very much. Our next presenter is a very, 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 very busy poet, Dave Johnson. He's author of Marble Chute and editor of the poetry anthology Moving. Dave Johnson is also a lecturer at Yale University, a visiting professor at New School University, an instructor at the Cooper Union School of Art. And he was just telling me something else he's doing, which sounds actually fascinating, and I wish he had time tonight to tell you about it. He was appointed by Mayor Bloomberg as the poet in residence for the New York City Department of Probation. And I'll leave it to him if he wants to talk about it at all, but it's just quite fascinating, and it's teaching people to teach other people, and he's making some new poets. So please welcome Dave Johnson.
Thank you very much. I want to first of all say thank you to the New York Society Library and to all the faculty and staff who puts us together each season. And it's really an honor and a privilege to be here with you again this year. It's been also an honor and a privilege to read these poems. I will echo what Robert said. It does feel like spring and summer has arrived when this evening comes. So it's always a delight to be here. I will say he's not lying when he says it's the most difficult season. He probably does say that every year, and I think it if I don't say it. This year, I actually have proof, though, because I sent emails back and forth and saying, can't we give even more honorable mentions? Because it was extremely difficult. So you'll see that my program is quite lengthy. But anyway, I'll keep it to short. I read for third and fourth grade poetry and fifth and sixth grade poetry. There were so many entries, and they were really, really dynamic and fantastic. I've got two honorable mentions for both categories. For third grade, a poem called I Am From, which you can read in the piece, by Charlotte Lily Borthwick. And this poem that struck me about this sort of existential hunger, if you will, I am from. We always think, who am I and where did I come from? And this one had just so many delightful ideas, you know, that struck me. I am from a bowl of lollipops at the bank, from the very cold D'Agostino supermarket. I am from fresh chocolate croissants. As you can see, I was starved by the end of this poem. So Charlotte, if you would come up. Where are you here? Are you here? Come up and receive your poem. Very shy. Want to come up? Oh, okay. That's okay. As writers, we're all temperamental. It's actually a virtue. The other honorable mention goes to Natasha Parker Rauscher. And I just, with this one, it was just packed full of images, and I couldn't get over, and I was struck. I'll just point out one. When she describes the moon, a white bowl of milk, and then the line break, moon splash, right? And she just sets that up. It was a beautiful, beautiful poem, chock full of really fabulous images. Natasha, if you'd come up. Are you here? You want to say a word about your poem? How you created your poem? You like this?
Well, since my mom really likes to walk on the beach, we see a lot of sunsets mostly, and one was very bright, and that just reminded me of a phoenix nest, because usually when they have to die, they have to burn their nest, and then they get reborn.
Very nice. Congratulations. Okay. Oh, okay. Congratulations. Okay. Okay. And the winner for the third and fourth grade is a poem that is so stark and thought-provoking. In the graduate program, I'm going deep tonight, at the MFA program where I teach at the new school downtown, I'm constantly telling my students, keep the poem tight, clear, crisp, concise, all of these kinds of words. And when I read this poem, I thought, this poem actually could make this through our workshop. I mean, this poem would make it. And it's so tight. I was so struck by this poem. It's one of the best short poems I've read in a long time, and I don't say that lightly. I always tell my students, cut, cut, cut. And with this one, there was absolutely nothing to cut. So Piper Sidney Brown, her poem, No Name, which I love too. Come up and get your award, please. Can you say something about your poem? You want to say something about how you...
I made this poem because we get poems every Tuesday for poetry at Dawn, and one poem had the words radish and moon in it, and those words inspired me to write a poem.
Beautiful, beautiful. Fabulous. I'm going to take a little picture here. Fantastic. You did a great job. Congratulations. Okay, now to the fifth and sixth grade. I have two honorable mentions there, too. One by Theo Coulson, who I don't believe could be here tonight, but if you read this poem, Theo really goes into all of these different birds, and you know, not only do we see the natural world and what each of these birds sort of represents to the speaker in this poem, a differentiation between the speaker and the writer, right? But the speaker in this poem, and then finally, the poem then allows it in the sort of the end of each line to sort of soar, if you will, to take off. So each bird actually takes flight in a metaphorical way. So I thought it was a brilliant use of that kind of poetic device. Theo, I don't believe, was here this evening, but when you see Theo Coulson, tell him he has a fantastic poem and congratulations. Our other honorable mention this evening for the fifth and sixth grade is Maxine Pravda, From the Top of the Apple. And, of course, any poem about New York gets a second look, even if you are sending it in from Connecticut or New Hampshire. But actually, with this poem, what I really am struck by are the questions that are provoked in this poem. And it reminded me somewhat of the Neruda poem, The Book of Questions. And there were some really fabulous questions in this poem that posed complex issues and didn't necessarily answer those questions, but push the reader in sort of a different direction that they might not normally have gone to. So, Maxine, if you will, come up and get your award. Can you say something about it?
My wonderful teacher, Ms. Ginsburg, encourages all her students to participate in the contest. And ironically, I was sick the day the poems were due. But she is so dedicated that she hand-delivered my poem to the New York Society Library. And from as my inspiration, I was living in New York City for 11 years, and yet I am so marveled every day by it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And finally, thank you, yes. Finally, the fifth and sixth grade poetry winner is a poet called Introspection by Emily Gaw. And I always tell the students, too, that you have about 2 seconds to get our attention, because in New York especially, there's so many other wonderful things we could be doing besides reading your poem. You don't have long. And with this one, I loved just the opening. I was 6 3/4 when it dawned on me. And the 3/4 just struck me. I love it. So I was in. But it really, the idea of connection in this poem, that one thought connects to another thought, and you know, in a sense, poems stop time. It allows us that thing. It's the magic of poetry that allows us to stop time and to think for just that moment. And I think this is what's happening in this poem. It reminded me of the great downtown New York City poet Frank O'Hara when he said, "Just write the next thought and trust that it's connected, because the one thing that those two thoughts have in common is you," right? Emily, come up and say something about this poem.
Okay, so you know those times when you're thinking of something you really have to do, and then that something connects to another something? And then that something connects to another something, and then you forget what you have to do. So that's what inspired me to write the poem.
Very good. Fabulous. Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And thank you. What do you want? Our next presenter is the presenter for 7th and 8th grade prose and poetry. And this is Carol Weston, who's also been one of our judges for many years. She's the author of 12 books for children and teens, including Girl Talk and the Melanie Martin series. She's also a popular advice columnist, so if you have any questions on your way out, you can just find Carol and ask her a few questions for Girls Life magazine. So please join me in welcoming Carol Weston.
Thank you. It's so much fun to be here, Susan Robbins. You were nice to thank us judges, but we just look forward to this. It's really great, and it's very inspiring. I mean, we do go home, and we have to write, and I always feel that the kids in this room get such joy in their writing, and they give such joy with their writing, and whether they use sticky notes and green pens or whether they don't get their hopes too far up, these are things that we adults can learn from. So thank you very much, and thank you, Dr. and Mrs. Wagner. I'm going to give the first prize is for poetry. Quinn Berry is the winner, and the poem is called Seize the Day, but it's not S-E-I-Z-E, it's S-E-A-S, the day, and it's about really being on a sailboat, and it's just wonderful wordplay from the get-go. We always think of breezes as being soft breezes, but it begins, the breeze blows hard against my face, and so already I'm just slowing down and reading the poem a little more. I'm not racing through this poem. I'm giving this poem the time that it deserves. And then there's a line about an unbalanced beam. And I thought, that's lovely, an unbalanced beam. And at the end, when the wind drops to a dappling breeze, I glide across the water peacefully, sailing back to the harbor. I wish this day would never end. Perfect days are rare. And I think that's such a wonderful thought at any age. But it's kind of lovely that even a seventh grader who's got the whole beauty we adults think of the endless summer, a perfect day is still a rare thing, and how wonderful that Quinn could not just appreciate it, but give it to us. So come on up, Quinn Berry.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I live in Connecticut by the beach, so I'm always like walking up and down the beach. And my parents are really big sailors. And when I was younger, I used to sail opties all the time. So that's where I got my inspiration. Thank you.
That's what seventh and eighth grade versus, you know, third and fourth grade and fifth and sixth grade. I guess I'm going to also just stop for 1 second and say that I've got a book coming out next year that is inspired completely by these evenings. It's called Ava and Pip, and Ava is a young writer. She's a fifth grader, and she, her librarian tells her, you're a good writer, you should submit something, and she worries, and she frets, and she has her hopes up, and she gets an honorable mention, and she's kind of wishing she could have won. But then she writes something that she kind of gets, and she gets herself into so much trouble because if you write a book, it can't be. And then she went home, and everybody was proud because that would be a bad book. So, but it all begins with this, with the whole library thing, and a man named Jerry Valentino giving her a prize. So, I believe in young writers. All right, for the prose, let me just tell you that the winners of both the winner and the honorable mention are not actually here, but their mother, one of the mothers and one of the grandmothers will be accepting the award. So for a brief nanosecond, I thought, well, that's disappointing because the kids are so darn cute and adorable and fun to listen to. But then I have to say it's really kind of lovely, too, because it's the parents and the grandparents who are behind these award-winning kids that really give them, you know, you parents and you grandparents and you librarians and teachers are talking to the kids right when you're holding them in your arms and you're continuing to talk and you're reading to them and you're continuing to read to them. And even when they're too big to let you read to them, I hope you're listening to books on tape, whether it's Of Mice and Men or To Kill a Mockingbird. Those are both two very good books on tapes, and there are lots of them right here in this library. So I think the moms and the dads and the grandparents deserve lots of honorable mentions. The first honorable mention I'm giving to Rosalie Steiner, and I'll just read you the first three sentences. A changeling is a fairy switched at birth with a human infant and then raised like a normal human being. The infant I replaced was named Jane. We switched on Christmas Eve. I thought, wow, that's just written with such authority. And to write, you know, a fantasy where you're just explaining what infant you have replaced. And then it's not, as you can read in your story, I don't want to spoil the story, but I will say that it's got a wonderful ending because there's another replacement that happens. And then the final line is, humans are such foolish creatures. So it's kind of tragedy with a light touch. And again, a lot of insight for a young person. So Rosalie Steiner's clearly inspiring grandmother, come on up and accept this award.
For me, this is so special because I had emailed to New Hampshire, where my son and daughter-in-law live, and Rosie and her big sister, and I said, do you think either one of you would be interested? And I never heard another word. And then my daughter-in-law called me and said, Rosie's written something, and she's just won honorable mention. So I am delighted, and I'm so happy she did it. And it kind of erases all those miles between New York and Hollis. So thank you so much.
That is great. And the winner for prose 7th and 8th grade category is Gabrielle Herzig. And this is a story called Tightening Strings. And it begins, I remember it clearly, colon. So you can't put it down. You have to find out what she remembers clearly. And she remembers going into a guitar store and paying $250 for a guitar that's a used guitar. And the narrator doesn't get along particularly well with his mom, and the mom says, you bought a used guitar with all that money, and he says, yeah, I did. Then at 12:30, I couldn't sleep. So the narrator starts playing Back in Black, and suddenly AC/DC is playing, and suddenly it's the year 1981. It's basically a magic guitar that takes you back in time. So if you pick up the used guitar and play Yesterday, suddenly Paul McCartney is, you are at a Paul McCartney concert in 1963. And Don McLean also plays, and Don McLean is the mother's favorite musician. So by the end of this story, the mother and the narrator, who'd been kind of yelling at each other, are closer than ever, and they feel very... the narrator feels really terrific that she's found something that's going to help them be closer. So we agreed that every Monday we would decide on a song for me to learn, and on Friday I would play it. We would both travel back in time to the concert together. My guitar really did bring us closer. So all the more reason that it's kind of lovely that the mom herself is coming, even if it's not the fictional mom. But Gabrielle Herzig, come and tell us more.
Hi, I'm sorry she's not here. She's on a school trip somewhere in West Virginia on the Appalachian Trail. So I hope she's okay. I will tell you she plays the guitar, and we have a little agreement. For every a Taylor Swift song, she has to play a little Crosby, Stills, and Nash. So, and for every modern song, she's going to play a Beatles song. So when she wrote this, she actually wrote this on an airplane. I think she probably wrote it in about a half hour. She had to do a school assignment, and there had to be a conflict where... something happened, but then something great happened at the end. But we do have a good relationship. We're actually really close, but this is a great little story. So thanks.
Thank you very much, Carol. Our last presenter, but not our least presenter, is Edra Zisk, who, among other things, is on our children's committee here at the library and has been doing that for many, many years, so we welcome Edra. She's an adult author. She's an author of adult novels, as opposed to being an adult. She is an adult, too, we suspect. And her novels include Acceptable Losses, A Cold Spring, and The Trespasser. And please, oh, and Edra's going to give an award for high school prose. So say hello to Edra.
Thank you. It's nice to be here again, and it's nice that these awards have continued for so many years. When Susan was speaking before, and she mentioned all the writers that had been affiliated with the library over a long period of time, it's kind of thrilling to be a writer and kind of carry that legacy forward. And when I first joined the library because I didn't have air conditioning at home, and it was really hot. And so there are writers' rooms on the top floor that you can book for a week at a time. And I booked a room, I guess, for the afternoons. And Wendy Wasserstein was working in the same room as me before me. So we would pass each other as we were going in and out of the room. And she was very sort of profligate with what she was writing because the trash basket was full of her drafts. And it occurred to me then, should I take this stuff? Because maybe it'd be worth something. But I didn't. Anyway, I chose as the winner of the high school category Rachel Goldstein's piece called Reflection. And there are a lot of things that I like about this piece. One thing is that the details are very nice. There's a detail about how the father in the piece had her memorize the state capitals off license plates and the blue light of the TV and hearing football games coming from another room in the apartment and her pink bike. And she returns to some of these details. She starts out in one paragraph and then the detail recurs in another way in another paragraph, which is a very nice a technique to use as a writer. It's very satisfying for a reader to see things recur. But the thing that I like best about this piece is that it has emotional truth. And emotional truth in writing isn't the same as literal truth. I've had writing students give me pieces and say, but this really happened. It doesn't matter really if it really happened. What matters is if the reader understands what you're trying to show them. Does it ring true? Does it feel true? And this piece does. She also uses some techniques that are the third paragraph. She taps into this feeling of anger and she repeats the two words, I wish, four times. And it's like a drumbeat, and it's strong, and you really feel the anger through those words. So emotional truth means that the reader has to believe what you're saying because it's the writer's job to make that happen. And she does that very nicely. So, Rachel, are you here? Is Rachel here?
Hi. I'm a junior in high school, so, you know, every night I stay up probably the latest in the house, and I will be on my computer, and I'll go off on a tangent maybe before I finish my homework, and I'll write something that I thought about during the day or something that I'm feeling at the moment, and one night I just kind of wrote this, and I wasn't going to share it with anyone, but one time during, because I'm part of my lit mag at school, I shared it during one of the meetings, and my teacher, Miss Murphy, she told me about this competition, and she said, you should really enter, and I was doubtful, but she did enter me in, and I really wish she could have been here, but she's at her son's baseball game, but yeah, and that's it.
Thank you, Carol, and thank you once again to our authors whose time and efforts and enthusiasm we really appreciate very much. So thank you very much. Jen, are you giving out certificates? You're not going to do that now. Okay. Mark. Let me introduce Mark. Bartlett, who is head librarian.
Well, it's my pleasure to just close the evening and thank you all for coming. Let me thank once again Dr. and Mrs. Wagner for their wonderful support of this event, which I say every year it's actually my favorite event in our members' room, and it truly is. It's a really special night, and it's a great tradition of our library. I really want to thank the judges once again for all their work, tireless efforts, long hours, and we thank you for everything you've done for us. A big thank you to the families and the librarians and the grandmothers and brothers and sisters, let's not forget them, who help support the writing efforts of all these great kids. I have one favor to ask of all the winners and the judges, if you can come near the front when we finish and start our reception. We like to get a nice photograph of the group of winners. So for all of you young writers, do keep writing, and tonight when you get home, take your cell phone and your iPad and all of those things and unplug them and take your pen and maybe read a book, but get back to the words, because they do make life very rich. Thank you all for coming.